Okay, let me see if I have the repeater. Okay, we're going to be falling into a rabbit hole any second now. There are waveguide lasers. Usually these are solid state devices, but there are planar channel waveguides used for waveguide lasers, and it's a bit of semantics. I wouldn't exactly call a standard operating optical laser a waveguide. It is an optical resonator. There's a mirror at one end, and there is a partial mirror at the other end, and the distances are tuned for the preferable lasing frequencies to reflect them back and forth and build on them. That's why some lasers are tunable. Again, wouldn't quite call that particularly a waveguide, although I'm sure some people would stretch the description and call it that. But again, that's the mechanism of creating the laser light to begin with. It's not really has much to do with its radiation pattern, its collimation and the diffraction limits and all the other things we've been talking about. It's just a mechanical aspect of how to pump the same frequency photon back and forth in the chamber that's being pumped with the light that ionizes whatever medium the laser is using to emit radiation.
KD2FIU.
Yes, George.
Okay, one thing is, Roy, first of all, you always have it. You always have it. And as far as I'm concerned, you're the one who's asking us to come into the net. But the thing that, the way I understand it in the beginning of the engineering, which I worked on three decades ago, is that the guide is the facility. All right, now, we're talking about the signal and the facility. The laser signal versus the facility that it's going to travel, the medium that's going to travel through. That medium can be free space. That medium can be square wave coaxial. It could be fiber optic. It could be anything with any resistive level, but you're going to have to adjust the signal, the laser signal, and its formation of the signal, its actual properties, to travel on the guide. So you have the laser, the signal, and you have the term called guide, which is going to be the facility that it's going to travel. And the facility can be as high as free space. Back to you, Roy, KD2FIU.
Okay, again, I appreciate that in the general parlance, waveguides are a means of taking energy one place and moving them someplace else. They're a transmission line, they're a conduit, there's a whole bunch of English terms that come somewhat close. Unfortunately, when you get to discuss lasers, you can go down rabbit holes because some mechanical aspects that pump the laser device itself before it gets out of the laser device is resonant structures that might or might not be considered some form of waveguide. So in that case, it's a little bit more than simply a conduit. It's a means of resonating the optical qualities of whatever system you're trying to lase. So it gets a little bit more confusing, unfortunately, when you dig into the weeds in physics, especially where lasers are concerned.
It becomes part of the facility, Roy. If you're trying to bring it out, it becomes part of the facility.
Okay, again, I think it's more of a matter of semantics. And once again, there is a concept of resonance that is built into lasers. We had this discussion a few years ago when we were talking about how the LIGO gravitational wave amplifies its signal, and we looked into it and found out that it works through resonant optical systems with mirrors and such. So it's a little bit more complicated, unfortunately, but laser light is, again, a very interesting field. There are solid-state lasers, there are gas lasers. You can actually, and I'm sure there's loads of YouTube, there are infrared lasers that operate on nitrogen gas, which is what's in our air. So if you apply enough power and the mirrors in the right place, you can produce your own infrared laser just based on air nitrogen.
Absolutely. And that's what I'm getting at. It's not just the signal. It can be, you can actually program it to come over any medium that you want. Thank you, Roy. KD2FIU.
And thank you, George, for participating. Wesley, any other points on this subject you want to make?
I think with the bushes, we beat the bushes for a long time, and people are sort of tired with that. The only interesting thing is that got an article, AC electric pulse from Tesla coil on the conductive channel made by a few milliseconds, repeated 500 times per second, the laser beam, and I'm trying to read that. So we have a 30,000 kilovolts DC source. It is very difficult to get a conductor from the laser beam. Of course, we could not stand on the fact that it is approximately 3 × 10^15 watts per square meter needed to ionize the air to become to create conductive path, because the area occupied by laser beam is very, very small, so it's relatively small power that is needed. But that article that I've got about the ability to create discharges through the laser beam is interesting. Anyhow, thank you very much, and thank you for your time.
You're welcome, Wesley. Thank you for your participation. Next on my lovely little list here is Paul, WS2N. What's your question or comment for tonight's TechNet, Paul?
Oh, okay, Roy. Yeah, it's just I guess a hidden king type of thing. You know, I have an HT. I've had it over a year now. An Olinko, DJ 500. And, I plug it into it comes in a stand, you know, you can plug it in and then you take it out, you could use it. But I noticed every time I put it back in, it would be recharging, and, you know, I didn't want to leave it on all the time. So I put it on my desk. I have radios and stuff all over you. I'm out of room. But I find some place to put it, and, you know, kind of annoying, you know, move it from one place to another. And then when you want to charge it, you plug it back in. So now, what happened today was, well, you know, actually yesterday I was getting ready for the Hurricane Andre. And I was going to, you know, hook up the radio to my 10-element beam, you know, that I have you know, with a rotator on. I figured, well, maybe I'll get into the repeater with 5 watts. So I was playing around with it, and I go to put it back into the charger. Let me drop it. And this time I put it in, and light didn't go on. And I said, that's odd. You know, everything's black. You know, the charger's black, the radio's black. But I realized they have guides. They have guides on the radio. I'm sure anybody with the same radio probably knows what I'm talking about, but I didn't. I said, look at this. If you push it forward and put it back in, it's just in there in the stand. It won't recharge. And then if you put it in, you put it toward the back, you know, using the guide, then it will charge. You know, now, all the stuff nowadays, you know, directions are just terrible. I never found this in my directions. It's just an observation, and if anybody has that radio, and has been doing the same thing I have for a year, you realize you don't have to do it. So it's just a Hinton King story. Back to you, Roy, WS2M.
Okay, very good, Paul. And by the way, our tropical storm was called Henri. I guess it's French for Henry. I have an Anytone 878, very nice radio, capable of analog and DMR, dual 70 centimeters and 2 meters. It seems to be the radio of people on DMR doing hotspots and such. Almost 80%, maybe 90% of the people who you meet using a hotspot are using an Anytone 878. It also has a slot like that so that it adds a little bit of pressure for the contacts. And so if you just slide it sideways and you don't engage it from the top down, it can't fully mesh with most of the contacts most of the time. So that's been kind of common design that I've seen for the last few years. I guess they don't want to have the technical accuracy of the plastic mold to be too stringent, so they use this as a more simple approach to get it to work without finessing the specs for manufacturer.
Very good. Okay. The point I was trying to make, though, is you never know what comes up. You know, getting ready in this case, a hurricane, and you learn something new. And that's the way it goes. Yeah, well, I don't know what I said. Henri. Anyway, the same name that was actually used back in 1985, it came our way toward Long Island in that year. And I think a few weeks after that went by, again, that went to made the ground very wet. But that was followed by Hurricane Gloria, which unfortunately was a Category 3 when that came across. You know, the eye wall was very wide. It included me, which was an ice slip, and I think it went around 20 miles to the west. So I hope Henri did not, you know, this is not a repeat of what happened in 1985, because that was a mess. Yeah, we were out for, I think, 11 days or something that time. Anyway, back to you, Roy, WS2.
Okay, I hope not. My understanding is the biggest problem might be some flash flooding in some areas. The Times tried very hard to photograph puddles of water to inform their readers. My guess is that we have not heard the last of a hurricane called Henri. Because he was downscaled to a tropical storm, I doubt that they're going to take that name out of the hopper. So give it enough time, and Henri will live again.
Yeah, well, if it lives again, I hope it goes out east again. Although I saw in the news that Rhode Island wound up with like almost 70,000 people, or some large number amount of people without power. Well, on Long Island, we only lost, at the most, I think it was around 2,200. I checked intermittently. And, as people were getting put back on, other people were getting thrown off. But that's not too bad. They never went below 99% of everybody being online. We, you know, that website that we use is pretty good. You know, PSE&G, they'll let you know the percentage that's out. You zoom in on your map, you can tell, you know, who's out and who's not out. You know, actually a very good map. I had a question about the smart meters, and maybe somebody knows. I tried to look it up on the internet. I get conflicting answers. Can I ask that question, Roy?
Certainly. It's very reminiscent. Dick, I think, had that question a couple of years ago. A couple of years have moved on. Sure, please.
I know it transmits the signal every now and then, so you don't have to read the meter. I always read my own meter and called it in. And, you know, every 2 months. Now, of course, I don't have to do that. So we know that works. But if you have a power failure, does that meter also let PSE&G? I know you got Con Ed, so you don't care about this, Roy, but I wonder if anybody on the island knows that. Does that meter send a notice, PSE&G, that your power is out? Not that it matters, but if it happens, which happens a lot here, right? I automatically call it in anyway. But I wonder if that's what's going on there. And if that's happening, you know, how often does it send the message? Does it send the message if it detects that there's no power coming in? That means it also must have a battery backup in there. That tells me it's got an, if that's true, that it's got an LED, it's got a some kind of a lithium ion battery in there, which my guess would eventually have to be changed. So anybody with any information about it, back to you, Roy.
Okay, I'll throw it out to the audience. We have some very interesting listeners and participants. I'm sure we'll find someone. I think in previous episodes, the general consensus was that these systems don't broadcast all the time and are picked up. I think what we were told back then was that utility companies have trucks that have transponders and such, and they travel, they hit their way across their areas, and they send signals back and forth from these devices from our home. So I don't know, you know, it's not like there's a central repository with a bunch of repeater systems built in that they have real-time information, but that could have changed in the ensuing years. So if there's anyone out there who knows about this stuff far better than I do, please hit that push-to-talk button.
WDAV has a thought.
Okay, Ed, I would love to hear your thought.
A year or two ago, they changed my water meter, and I was talking to the technician, and apparently it uses text messages, you know, cell phone text messages, and a couple of times a day, it transmits the text message, and I can only speak for that one quarter, but that's not a very viable way to do it.
Okay, I wasn't aware of that, but then that brings into question what happens when cell towers are not really working the way they should. I guess the ones that rely on that will necessarily have problems because of it.
Well, the point is, they used to manually read it like every month or two, so as long as you get data in less time than that, you haven't gone back.
Yes, agreed. It's an easier system. Again, it's curious. Unfortunately, a lot of this is not really published, I think, because people are paranoid about homeland security and people hacking into things and people controlling things and people breaking things. So you never kind of will find any source material for the design specifications or what they do and what they don't do. I would tend to think, unfortunately, it's probably a mishmash. Different utilities use slightly different technologies with slightly different characteristics. I guess some of them just go off of a cell tower. Others go off of a regular truck that just runs through the neighborhood making queries to the devices. So it's probably a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I wouldn't at all be surprised if it has some kind of rechargeable battery in it. Don't know if it's enough to power the RF or simply to keep the operating system and a couple other little bits and pieces happy, but you never know.
One thing is, I don't remember mentioning how the
Okay, unfortunately, after you said I don't remember, you kind of were engulfed in much more noise than signal.
No, I don't remember how the water meter was powered unless it has a battery that's as good for, like, say, 3 years, and every 3 years I have to go around and replace the battery.
Well, you know, I guess if it's a very low signal and very infrequent signal, you can squeeze a reasonable amount of energy out of it. And plus, I'm sure there's a doodad inside that gives them a warning when the power level is you know, the voltage level is dropping below a point where they should get some person to your house to swap out the battery. That would be interesting.
Yeah, something like that makes a lot of sense. I can't think of any other way to do it, especially for water meter as opposed to a power meter, where you usually have a lot of electricity to charge the battery.
The US-2N?
Yes, Paul.
Yeah, I know our water meter definitely has a lithium-ion battery in it. I went over that with the guy when he put that in years ago. That's been in there a while. And I have no idea when that's going to eventually have to be changed. The power meter, I don't know what they're doing. I've heard different stories that they're transmitting from one power meter to another, and it's like a mesh network. So there's all kinds of rumors out there on that. Don't have a straight answer on it. That's why I asked the question. And Ed's signal, he used to always have a good signal. The last couple of weeks, not too good. Back to you, Ron.
Right now I'm indoors on the HT. I'm not using my outdoor antenna.
Mystery solved. Thank you.
Yes, I kind of assumed that. Ed has two kind of intensities. One is a bit on the noisy side from the HT, and the other is, you know, when we annoy him enough, He'll go outside, or he'll he has something stronger he can throw at the repeater. So that's great. But yeah, I mean, obviously things like the water meter that are not really hooked up to utility power need some kind of secondary power. Theoretically, I guess if you were able to get people closer to your device who could scan it with RF and then relatively sophisticated devices can then absorb the RF and echo it back. The little RFID detectors that Dick had been working on in the past. But that requires proximity. You can't do that from a distance. You can't do that from in the middle of the street. So you have to rely on something with a little bit more oomph than that.
WA2FHX with a comment.
Yes, please, comment away.
Yeah, these smart meters have a tendency to explode. We have a piece of property in Brooklyn. We just had one explode a couple of weeks ago. And they actually installed it about 5 weeks ago, and it exploded.
Did they give any particular reason? I guess lithium ion batteries do explode. There's more than enough YouTubes of people with their cell phones leaving a crater. So did you get any kind of indication of what went terribly wrong? Again, my guess would be probably the lithium polymer or the lithium ion battery.
When I mentioned this to Con Edison, Well, first of all, I kind of Googled it about meters exploding because I found this very strange, and this is pretty common. It's been happening all over the place. And when I mentioned this to Con Ed, they said they never heard of it.
Well, that's what utilities often tell you. I doubt it's a lack of Googling and more public relations. They don't know anything about that. Yeah, I did a little Google myself. It takes about a quarter of a second. And you get all kinds of things, smart meter fires and explosions, smart meter fires being covered up, surprise, surprise, exploding smart meters, heat up Queen's Park. Smart electricity meters can be dangerous and insecure. So I haven't read them, so I don't know how much of them are real and how much of them are imaginary. But lithium-ion devices are somewhat problematic. I mean, it's kind of self-evident. You can tell when you're getting a lithium-ion package from UPS or FedEx or what have you, because it has that big safety sign on it. Caution, only ship this ground. Don't ship this in the air. They still can be dangerous, which causes me some concern over things like the Tesla car. They're using the Tesla car in these little tunnel things in Las Vegas. You know, I'm worried about, God forbid, if one of those Tesla batteries go nuclear while it's sitting in those little enclosed tunnels, how do you get anyone out of them? Hopefully, I'll never find out the answer to that one.
Yeah, regarding these batteries, I think it's more than the battery that exploded. Because this meter was gone. I mean, the fire department came, and it's lucky the house didn't burn down. And it took out a whole block. I mean, it fried the wires from the building to the transformer in the street. I think it's a little more than the battery exploding.
I don't know what's entailed in a water meter. I would have assumed that it's a somewhat simple flow device with some magnets and wires that converts the flow to a current that increments some kind of electronics, and then the battery handles that and handles the handshaking for the RF. I can't imagine what particularly is required in a water meter that would be inherently high storage of potential energy like a battery is. Yeah, that kind of would be, for me, the go-to reason why. I mean, I don't know if you've ever seen these YouTubes, but sometimes these lithium iron packs can go critical and can burn up. Lithium fires are nasty things.
KD2FRU.
Yes, George.
Hi, Roy. I think your call-in is referring to maybe electric meter, because he keeps mentioning Con Ed and not the DEP on a water meter. So I'm not sure what the clarification is while I'm listening.
Okay, maybe I misconstrued. Are we talking a water meter or are we talking an electric utility meter?
An electric meter, and it was a three-phase coming in from the street.
Oh, okay. So, yeah, I mean, it could be almost any fault with the wiring that would lead to a short that could generate a great deal of energy and burn the heck out of that thing.
Yep, that's true. I just found it strange that 3 weeks before this happened, they put in the smart meters.
Oh, well, who knows if it is a design flaw or a manufacturer flaw or just a random case of bad luck. Probably a combination of the first two.
KD2FIU?
Yes, George.
And with Con Ed, you're never going to get an answer. They don't answer to Public Service Commission. They don't answer to the state. They don't answer to authorities, even when Even when major transfer stations blow up, like they have done locally, they still haven't answered for years on how it happened. So about your meter, I'm sorry it happened, but Con Ed just won't answer.
Well, George, you know, that's true, but unfortunately, that's not uncommon with utilities. Utilities are curious structures that somehow they've been given a monopoly, and they run with it. So I think most utilities are unfortunately like ours, rather than like one that would be better citizens.
WS1.
Yes, Paul.
I don't know what kind of meters, you know, what the connections are or anything in the back. But this one, you know, I saw when it was put in and it had four connections. You know, it had the, you know, the 220 capability. You know, you have the, you got the one side and the other side, you know, for 220, and you got the one down the middle for neutral. That's how you get your 110, and then it's just a ground connection. It's four connections. They pull the old one out, literally pull it out, and it unplugs, and then they put the new one in. Then, I mean, this thing, to actually do it, it takes longer to open a box and, you know, and get ready to pull it out than it does to pull it out and install the new one. It probably took the guy, you know, 30 seconds to do it. And so there's no wiring or anything. If something failed, I guess, in the Con Ed meter, maybe it's something in the meter itself, you know, the wiring or the, you know, some kind of a short or something in the meter. But then you would think it would fail right away. It wouldn't take, like, you know, weeks later. Back to you, Ron.
WB2EAV.
Yes, Ed.
Yeah, outdoor antenna. It stopped raining, so I'm outside. I know a fair amount about electric meters, but let me start by saying Con Ed and the original LOCO system have one major difference. The LOCO system, you usually have a neutral and two hots that are 180 degrees out of phase. With Con Edison, they're 120 degrees out of phase, which in the case we're discussing is not a big deal. But if you want to go down into that rabbit hole, you need to know that. But typically, they have a current transformer on each line, and a potential transformer on each line, and a power transformer on one line to actually power the electronics. But they're fairly simple. They really should not blow up.
There's no chance of some kind of thermal runaway occurring if there's a problem with the conductors, connectors being, you know, transient or partial or oxidizing or something?
Well, a current transformer is just a donut that fits over the line. I mean, a current transformer is you run the wire through a toroid, but at 60 cycles, it's probably, you know, probably straight iron or something. And with like 1,000 turns of wire on it, so for every amp you put in, you get a milliamp out. So it's a nice, easy thing to monitor. And I can't see a catastrophic failure there. The voltage is monitored with step-down transformers, which is what every ham would understand. And those can conceivably fail catastrophically, but usually they're pretty small, wouldn't do too much damage. On the other hand, those explode me. A true explosion would probably risk burning down the house, so I think the description may have been a little bit overstated, that the whole thing just failed catastrophically without taking out the support building.
KD2FIU.
Yes, George?
When it was installed in my home about 2 years ago, I specifically asked the question, can Con Ed remotely operate a relay to disconnect my power? And the guy looked at me and nodded his head yes with a smile. So there is a controllable relay system in there. It's not a straight through. Just wanted to add that into whatever we're doing with, they're doing with the monitoring system of this. It's more than just a plug-in meter. This thing has a controllable relay system on top of the plug-in meter.
I find that rather difficult to believe. Should I explain why?
Sure, Ed.
To cut your power if you don't pay the bill.
WB2CQT.
Let's see what CQT says. Maybe he knows. I'm just guessing.
I secondary that there is a relay in there, solenoid relay. There's a switch and they can do that. You don't pay your bill, they don't have to come to your house, they can shut you off.
My comment is, how often does that happen? I would think if they're turning off power to a house, this is something with legal repercussions if they don't handle it properly. And I would think it's rare enough you send somebody and just pull the whole meter out. I'm worried about legal repercussions if they just cut somebody off idly. And I can't believe that happens often enough that sending somebody there would be a big deal.
KD2FIU, input.
Yes, George, just one second. I am sure they send registered letters and cover their backsides as far as the lawyers are concerned. This may not legally require you to have a person at hand. If you can kind of document that you've attempted repeatedly to contact the individual and they haven't responded in one way or the other, I think they're pretty much covered, but I'm not a lawyer, thankfully.
KD2FIU.
Yes, George, please.
Thank you, Roy. The way I understand it, it's also for grid control. Grid control for consumption breakdown in areas. If they want to cut down areas, they don't have to tell you anymore to stop using your hair dryer or your clothes dryer or your air conditioner anymore. They can do it. Number one, it is for consumption control. Number two, of course, delinquency control. And number three, it is a point of failure of electronics within the device that's placed in your home. So we're talking about point of failure, which the radio operator who called in was mentioning, major point of failure that caused a fire. So that circuitry does exist, and the levels of that control can go beyond the three that I just mentioned, KD2, FIU.
Okay, George, let me see if I have it. Okay, always like to be cautious. I, again, not a lawyer. I have lawyers in the family, but thankfully not a lawyer. I would imagine that's just asking to have your backside sued out from under you. If you brown out areas, even if you cut power to areas, I think it puts you into less trouble than if you somehow randomly decide that we need to turn off John Smith's power for the next 3 hours because we need the power elsewhere. If you don't know John Smith and you haven't documented that you've advised John Smith, and John Smith is on an iron lung and relies on that power and doesn't have any kind of temporary power, and he passes on this mortal coil, his family will sue your backside out from under you. So that's probably the most litigious use of a utility device I can imagine. So I would assume it would be primarily for the first two and not so much for the third that George mentioned.
I do have another thought.
Yes, Ed.
Power companies absolutely do have the ability to shut down a feeder or a network. And if they were that desperate, they probably would be better off shutting down a neighborhood rather than individuals. But again, I know they have the capability, but I have no idea what they do with it.
Yeah, I mean, utilities like to be enemies of people, but they usually don't want to be that much enemies of people. I tend to think it's probably more out of sheer laziness. If a customer is not paying their bill and not responding and not making any kind of movement where they're gonna pay their bills, some bright guy in management might have decided that to spend the money on the switch to turn it off, rather than have an employee go there and possibly risk some type of emotional assault, attack, what have you. You know, if people who don't want to pay their electric bill and don't want to have their electricity stopped are probably not going to be terribly pleasant to a utility guy turning it off. So probably some engineer at the manufacturers for those utility control boxes said, you know, for a mere additional $2, we can throw in a kill switch. You know, even a lot of our Chinese radios have something that are called kill switches.
T2FIU?
About the time I shut down part of I personally caused a power failure on part of St. Albans, Queens.
Yeah, George recognized Ed, you were saying?
Should I tell you about the time I caused the power failure in St. Albans, Queens?
Yes, please do.
Con Edison in that area has overhead lines. They have substations that receive 27 kV, step it down to 2.5 kV for overhead distribution. And what they have is the 2.5 kV feeders go between two substations, and there is a redundancy there. You can shut down, you can open the breaker on one side of the feeder and feed it from the other side. It allows for redundancy. I was doing some work for Con Edison with a contractor, and we had to open up a breaker in the St. Albans substation. And a crew was sent to verify that the other end of the feeder was live, so we could open our end, decouple from the network without causing any problems. So a ConEd technician and I shut off the power, and then we realized the line went dead. And he says to me, those SOBs said they checked the far end, they probably went out for coffee instead. So we flipped it back on again, but for about 15 seconds, part of St. Albans was blacked out.
Oh, well, it was only 15 seconds, I guess. Goes to show what kind of power people have. Geez, I don't know. I know someone who keeps telling me that he thinks that people are not quite as bright as they once were. I have nothing to judge that by. I simply think that he's talking to more people who aren't that swift these days than he spoke with 10, 20, 30 years ago. But, you know, people rise to the level of their incompetence is what that old rule says. So, George, you wanted to say something?
Yeah, real quick before the horse whinnies. Over here, every Con Ed bill online or through paper requests that you notify them for emergency purposes to be placed on your account so that they don't cut you off for emergency purposes that you need. It doesn't eliminate their liability. It diminishes it. So they do have in place a factor against your billing that can reduce the cutoff. However, they're constantly notifying you with every billing online or on paper to diminish their liability. KD2FIU, the horse whinnied. Thank you, Roy.
Okay, as opposed to the fat lady singing. CYA, this is what all businesses do, reflectively, and especially when you bring in the lawyers, they like to cover their backside as much as humanly possible. A lot of these things are not really permissible in a court of law. Very often they get thrown out, but it doesn't cost them that much to do it, so they do it and they document it, and they think they've earned their retainers for that week. So be it. Anyone else with any comments on this particular subject? It's a push to talk and tell me who you are.
WB2CQT.
Yes, CQT.
Some time ago I saw a YouTube video of German engineering students investigated the electric kind of meters they had in their country, and they wrote programs, and those meters would send out information to the electric company in real time, continuously, and they were, let me let it drop a second, and they demonstrated this with charts and diagrams from their computers and everything. They were able to tell what kind of appliances were being used at the moment in the house, like it's a hairdryer, a toaster, a clothes dryer, and believe this, you're not going to believe this last one, they were able to, the television playing a certain program on the screen, the images change on the screen, and the TV uses slightly different amounts of current as those pictures change on the screen. They were able to determine what channel the TV was tuned to and what program was playing using the computer programs they made to monitor the signals coming out of the electric meter. Go ahead, Roy.
GD2FIU.
I find that a little bit hard to believe. WB2EAV.
Okay, you had a bunch of doubling going on between Ed and George. I'm always a little suspicious of hackers' reports. It kind of reminds me, Wesley out there once told the technical net about a company that has a patent, apparently, for being able to detect the capacitance across the world, and by changing the capacitances in different places, registering it on their devices, they can tell where people are going and coming from. I think that's a little bit beyond. I think in many ways it's beyond. I think they're inferring information. They're getting possibly the current peaks and valleys and extrapolating what a 1500 watt device could be. So I would take it with a little bit of a grain of salt personally. But these things are going to be more and more popular as Internet of Things chips get inserted into everything, and everything's going to query everything else. Privacy is a thing of the past in the long run. In the short run, I don't think we're quite up to the brave new world. So let's see, Ed first and then George. So Ed.
I have designed some systems that this thing kind of reminds me of. And the only way, what you could do is, you know the current draw, and you could estimate, but I don't think you could tell the difference between a hairdryer and a toaster. They draw about the same power. And as far as TV programs is concerned, that would mean you would have to monitor the current and have a broad spectrum demodulation that maybe you would get some kind of leakage, that maybe you'd get some, 10 megahertz, 100 megahertz stuff appearing at, microvolt or less levels on the line, and use that and play with it with complicated computer algorithms. And this would cost you millions and millions and millions to develop it, and thousands and thousands for each installation. So I really have to question that.
Yeah, I mean, I have seen reports on similar type of things, and it's kind of a cherry-picked kind of a closed system where you're in control of everything and you're kind of demonstrating stuff at the same time, as opposed to hacks that occur in the wild. You know, it's much easier to do things in a closed system that you control all aspects of than an open one in the wild. So I can't tell you how much of this is real and how much of this is best case. You know, if everything is right, you can do it, but most of the time you can't. But George, you wanted to say something?
Thank you, Roy. KD2FIU. When the installation was done on my property a few years ago, the guy told me that he was leaving to go to Europe, and the same meters were going to be deployed all through Europe. They had been deployed in Eastern Europe. He was going to go to England, and he was going to be working on jobs in England and then moving on into France and Italy. He was planning on spending the next 5 years there. Let me let it drop. The technician that I spoke with had nothing to do with the local power company. It was the local power company's hired contractor to do this. He's telling me all of these meters are made in China, and they have the capability of monitoring power levels at different times of the day. I understand that. They want to know if your power levels are high in the morning, midday, afternoon, so that the power grid monitoring systems can adjust power when there are power problems in your area. He said, we got problems in Europe. We're having resistance. This is 2 years ago. We're having resistance because they also have RF monitoring systems in them. I'm not saying I'm agreeing with what anybody said, but this is what was said to me by the technician who was going to go to Europe for a few years to do the installations.
Okay, so, look, I could be as paranoid as the next guy. Every so often, I'll take a look at my lovely Lenovo ThinkPad and wonder if the Chinese have put a couple of little extra chips in there. Like I said before, the privacy is a thing of the past. You know, we got to get used to it. If we work really hard, we could be slightly private, but not terribly. So this is just the future. To kind of say it's the Chinese scheming to take over the world, I'm sure they'd love to take over the world. I don't know if they're capable of it. I don't know if you guys have ever used Chinese equipment. It tends to somewhat be erratic. Although they could meet a price point, I don't know if they could finesse as much as some people give them credit for. So I don't know what to make of any of this. I tend to try not to think of things as plots. Companies want more control, they want more information. All of these companies do. And so you have devices in your house that are owned by Amazon, and surprise, they talk back to Amazon and they dump all the kind of interesting stuff that they receive from your house. And probably so does Google products, and so probably does the iPhone product. So, again, privacy is a thing of the past. We all got to get used to it. Keep little blinders on your cameras just in case, because even if the indicator lights go off, that doesn't necessarily mean that the camera went off.
More comments. WB2EAV.
KD2FIU.
Okay, Ed first.
Two items. What George said a little while ago makes previous sense. These days, the move is to have universal stuff. If you look at your cell phone charger, you'll probably see it accepts 85 to 300 volts, 50 to 60 hertz. So that's universal worldwide. You don't have to have one for the U.S., one for Europe. So I can certainly see where they would go with a common meter. As far as the time of day, there is such a thing as time of day metering that has been dabbled with. I don't think it's ever caught on, but the idea being, there has been discussions where you can sign up with the power company and your electricity rate varies. So basically, it's cheaper at night and more expensive during the day. So that would correlate with what George is saying. Second subject, it is well known that cell phones can be hacked, some are more hackable than others, to actually monitor what is going on in a room when you have no intention of making a call. And for that reason, any place that's doing government classified work no longer allows any phones in the room whatsoever for fear of them being hacked into bugs. Roy, WB3B.
Yeah, I agree with you. Matter of fact, there were a lot of articles written about security breaches in the last 4 years with a high level of meetings that were taking place, obviously, in the presence of many unsecured cell phones, because there were all kinds of cell phone-related images being sent all over the place, and it was rather self-evident, a lot of cell phones. So, yeah, cell phones, I wonder if these people who have this weird thing about the vaccines being a means to chip people, that they contain nanochips that identify you and you can be tracked. For God's sakes, everyone who's carrying a cell phone that isn't incinerated has one of those things built into each and every one of those. No one needs to vaccinate you with a chip. They have a chip in your cell phone, and most people won't let go of it. So, yeah, there's a lot of security issues with a lot of electronics, and sometimes they're violated, unfortunately.
KD2FIU.
Yes, George.
Yeah, this is where I was going with this. And you actually supported it by saying that. Of course, I don't believe about the pharmacist shooting chips into my arm. However, let me let it drop. Recycle the repeater. So we are requested to pay our telecom bill online, our electric bill, our gas bill, our energy bills, our tax bills, our mortgage bills, everything. Requested to pay everything online. And then you have a problem with your telecom company. How many bills are you paying? The USPS is still delivering mail and picking up over here.
Well, that's true, George, but for the most part, when I pay my bills, I never automate the bills. So every month I take the trouble of reviewing the bill, what they're charging me for, whether it's gone up, whether it's gone down, and I make the effort to pay the bill. I understand that some people like the easier approach and to just have it automated. Again, maybe I'm paranoid, I don't know, but I usually do not opt in to automated payment. And most utilities and such are perfectly happy as long as they get the money.
Bottom line is, Roy, if you don't have telecom because they've cut you off, you're not paying anything.
No, I just said it's cheaper for them. It costs money. Envelopes have to be stuffed manually.
Okay, and unfortunately, I think George and me kind of doubled with you a bit. That's true. There is an Achilles heel thing going on with telecommunication. I would think that most of us tend to have at least two, well, they might not be different, but two.